Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Martin's grip walk was brilliant. Do you know what I mean? It was, but that was probably the most entertaining part of the weekend, you know.
Hello and welcome back to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ellie Mae Taylor, and today I'm joined once again by my ever-capable co-host, Jesse Billington and Tima Malvisani. How are you?
Yeah, not doing too bad. Had a nice little weekend away, but back at the desk and ready to talk all things Formula One, and specifically this year's calendar, I think, is what we've got on the agenda.
It is indeed, and I'm so very good. Thank you very much for asking. How are you, Ellie Mae?
I'm good, thank you. We're also joined by a friend of the podcast and Inside F2 host, Fraser Ford. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Yeah, no, it's, what are we, a week away from the start of the season, all things kicking off, Formula 1, Formula 2, Formula 3, and I'm really, really excited for the season to start, to be honest with you. So yeah, I'm good, thank you very much.
Winter break has been far too long. Someone in the script has put we're gathered here today, so is this a wedding?
I could not resist.
We're basically taking a quick glance at the Formula One 2023 calendar and giving our thoughts on it ahead of the new season. So who wants to open up on their thoughts?
I'll do a quick run through of the calendar. Not that anyone listening to this probably won't know it already, but in very quick style, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Baku, Miami, Imola, Monaco, Spain, Canada, Austria, Silverstone, Budapest, Spa, Zandvoort, Monza, Singapore, Japan, Qatar, US again, Mexico, Brazil, Las Vegas, and Abu Dhabi. 23 races in total. And packed calendar. And yet somehow quite spread out at the same time.
I mean, it's not the longest calendar as regards time and duration it takes to get through it all. It's all quite condensed. There's a couple of periods where we're doing triple header weekends, which is going to be quite, I don't want to say arduous, but it's going to be quite full on for certain. Because obviously some years we've been finishing as late as sort of second weekend of December almost, but I think we're wrapped up by pretty much halfway through November. So we've packed in these 23 races, but I don't know if we've packed in the right ones, which is, I feel like, more why we're gathered here today. We know obviously what the calendar is, but there are some omissions and additions that have raised quite a few eyebrows up and down the world of Formula One. I think most notably the changes are the loss of France, which over the recent years is now actually a sad thing to say goodbye to because it started producing good races. He says, as Ellie Mae dons her Circuit Paul Ricard bucket hat. She's followed my trick from last week with appropriately themed headwear.
So I'm kind of sad that I'll no longer get to wear this.
You have to go along to Paul Ricard
European
doesn't host
Le Mans series.
Yeah, I was gonna say European.
But I don't think this year either, to be honest. So that doesn't work.
Let's see Fraser, talk to us about the loss of France from the calendar while I see if anything is actually happening at Paul Ricard this year.
Yeah, I mean, will I miss France? Absolutely not. No, to be honest with you. I thought it was, how many years were we there? It was first year 2018, and I can't remember a good race there, to be honest with you. I mean, 2022 was probably the best race we had there. And it was all right. It wasn't bad, was it? But I mean, it wasn't great. And before then, I don't really remember a very entertaining race, to be honest with you. A little bit savage, but I definitely won't miss France. I'm sure the teams will. I mean, you know, lovely weather out there, lovely location for a race. But if you're not there and you're watching on TV, I didn't think it was the most entertaining. I don't think the track itself, I don't know. I don't think it's set up for good racing. I don't think it suits the cars. Will I miss the race? No, probably not, to be honest with you.
I've got to agree with you, Fraser. I mean, I think I was going back to all the races I think I've seen since 2014, since the new hybrid either era, trying to work out which ones I'd missed, and it wasn't very many. But France's first one in 2018, I do admit I didn't watch that. And I didn't feel like I missed an awful lot there either. It seems better suited to other racing series. I remember F2 when Iwasa was there. That was a pretty good race of his because he had some gnarly overtakes there around that the long bend at the back of the circuit, but not F1. So it was all right last year. But again, it's kind of by France's own standards, which nice place, nice weather. Enjoyed Ted Kravitz a lot there last year, but that's not the racing.
I mean, I, as a Ferrari fan, didn't enjoy France last year, but I think that's more personal reasons to that one. On the question of whether France is actually hosting anything this year, they've got a fairly packed calendar of racing events, but I mean, nothing huge. Like Timo said, you've got GT World Challenge Europe powered by AWS Endurance Cup. Then there's a big gap. You've got the 4 hours of Castellet Elms race, International GT Open, a bit of karting, and most notably, Paul Ricard hosts something called the Bordeaux, which is a sort of crazy motorcycle race, big motorcycling festival. But other than that, it's pretty thin on the ground for sort of big, sort of prominent racing series going on at Paul Ricard. So it's going to be interesting to look at the continued existence of the circuit. Now it's losing out on the big money that Formula One brings in. So that's going to be interesting. And if we do return to France, whether we would see it return to a different circuit would also be a question that might be raised.
Wouldn't mind going back to one of the older tracks there in France.
Magny-Cours.
Yep.
Or Pau. Wouldn't go really old.
I think whilst the racing hasn't been overly that exciting there, I think it was the one track that was the most environmentally friendly in the sense that it had a lot of solar panels. I mean, the sheep would graze on the grass to keep the grass down. So in terms of trying to make motorsport a sort of a more environmentally friendly place, I guess we're kind of losing that. But
you can't really. To be fair, it probably doesn't offset even half of what Las Vegas is going to be doing. So,
and you can't really keep a track there because it's one of the greener ones.
I mean, I know Barcelona's followed in its footsteps as well. They've gone down a similar sort of route of having sheep grazing the grasslands. They use food waste from it goes off to biogenerators. So France almost lost its niche as other circuits have picked up on it. And I think when it wasn't providing good racing, it had already written itself into the list.
Well, again, it's already a niche that shouldn't really be a niche either, because it should just be the basics of what all the circuits are having to do, as Formula One supposedly says it wants to be more environmentally friendly and all the rest of it. So if that was what it was pinning its hopes on, then that was a very badly played hand,
especially with Formula One's idea of, oh look, we're being greener and better to the environment, and then sticking Canada in the middle of the European leg, and you sort of go, okay,
there's a lot about this calendar not to love, to be honest, in terms of order.
Yeah, you've got Miami and Canada in between this sort of weird bit where you transition from the Middle East up through Baku and into Europe. That makes perfect sense as a sort of drawing it as a route, as a line. You get this nice arc coming up from the Saudi Arabian Peninsula in through Baku and then across sort of the lower edge of Europe. It makes perfect sense. But halfway through it, you sort of jump across to Miami and then back again, and then jump back out to Canada and then back again. And you're going, but why? Imola, Monaco, Spain, perfect. It's literally a short sort of arc drawn out of those three circuits. And then you go all the way to Canada to come back to Austria. It's this thing of Formula One going, oh, look, we're being better. Also, we're going all the way around the world 4 million times, just try and tick off all these circuits in an order that makes very little sense.
I think it's down to logistics, isn't it? I mean, but from what I know anyway, Canada, there's only a certain time of the year they can do the race, which is in June, which is probably why they then jump back there in June and then go back to Europe, which, as you say, is very odd, isn't it? But I mean,
weather-wise, though, I would say, slightly. I know that from May until at least the end of September, that ain't going to be frozen, trust me. So you can make that work in a way. Even if you started off your second leg of the season over there to go to US and Mexico and all that after you finish off in Europe, there's still plenty of time there. And even if it's a little bit chilly, it's still not going to be as frozen as it normally would be. So it seems like, logistics, but eh.
I mean, weather logistics-wise, you've got to remember in 2020, we were racing at the Eifel Grand Prix and the Nürburgring in the German mountains in October, and there was bits of snow around then. I've been to Germany around that time of year and seen snow on the ground, and Formula One got away with it perfectly fine, bar a bit of heavy rain that kept the helicopter grounded, which meant we missed out on an FP1. Other than that, I think you could probably get away with the Canadian Grand Prix in a sort of late September spot before then doing your American races, Mexico, Brazil.
You just go south.
Yeah, and then just sort of following south where it's warmer because of the sort of equatorial shift. But yeah, and I don't know, the whole Miami thing, again, it's purpose-built. It's been designed to do that. Why didn't you just simply pick a better spot when you added it to the calendar so you could at least do Miami and Canada back-to-back while you're in that neck of the woods early on in the season? There's a lot of very simple flaws that for some reason no one was quite happy to discuss when they just said, yes, you get a Grand Prix. Feel free to pick a weekend.
Yeah, other changes to the calendar. Oh, sorry, go on, Ollie, mate.
I was just going to say the exact same, that if you can't go to Canada later because of the weather, at least club Canada and Miami together, because Miami is round 5 and Canada is round 9. And it's also like the stupid thing of we do round 10 of Austria, we then go round 11 British Grand Prix to then go back to Hungary, which isn't that far from Austria, for round 12. So it's like, why are we not doing Austria and Hungary together? Why are we jumping to Great Britain to then go back to a similar area of Europe? It doesn't make sense.
Especially because they're neighbouring countries. Austria and Hungary bump into each other running along the Danube, and then for some reason we're hopping to Silverstone, whose calendar I know quite well, and I know that it's fairly flexible through that period of time, that you could possibly move Silverstone to a slightly different spot in the calendar. Why? I don't know. And equally, we've got massive air hubs, so if you were to sort of clump your Miami and Canada together, it'd be the ideal spot to come back to after Canada before heading off and doing a short European leg and then calling it quits for the summer break. Again, logic wasn't really employed when they made this. They just sort of put out clearly like some sort of Survey Monkey thing and just said, pick the weekend you're free and we'll go from there. And they sort of sent that clearly first to Bahrain and then second to Abu Dhabi and then let everyone else fill in the gaps around it. And what we've ended up with is a mess.
Which as well, going back to then Bahrain is round 1, Qatar is round 18. They're so close together in proximity to each other, yet they're at the other ends of the calendar. Why?
Yeah. Qatar vaguely makes sense because as you're sort of going from America or Japan, you could either fly across the Pacific to America for Texas, or you could fly the other way around and sort of stop off at Qatar.
It would still make more sense to Qatar before Abu Dhabi, but
it would make more
sense.
There's a lot of
stuff where I think we did this last year, Jesse. If we go back and listen to that podcast where we went over the calendar, it was probably the same kind of annoying grievances we had then.
Yeah, just the silly uselessness of it. But obviously, like we've already mentioned, we've got Qatar joining the list. We've got who else we've got new on the list this year? We've also got Las Vegas, and it's a bit of an odd combination of tracks there to add in. Losail was all right when we saw it in 2021, yeah. And Las Vegas, I don't really have high hopes for. But we'll start with Losail. Views on it when we were last there for Formula One.
I
personally quite enjoyed it because you had Lewis and Max going at each other again, which was quite fun, and both of their rear gunners weren't really anywhere to be seen, which led to Alonso being able to do Alonso things and get up to third place. And it was just a new track. It kind of gave 2020 vibes in that sense of we hadn't been there before. It was just nice to have something a bit fresh. And I think that probably helped it in the sense that it didn't have to be the best race in the world for it to be entertaining and right there, because it's just new, and normally you'd have MotoGP going around there, and it just gave a bit something different. If you look at it from a purely racing point of view and ignore the rest of everything else going on in Qatar, then it was enjoyable from that respect. But it's, again, it raised a lot of question marks outside of racing about, I kind of agree with Dominic Hurley that we're probably better to go to these places and try and do some stuff, but you need to have some kind of proof in content creation, at least to show that they're making conceited effort to improve things on the ground there. And it's not just what we all suspect it is, which is just a massive paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And Fraser, quickly going. Sorry.
Go on, Ellie.
I was just going to say, quickly going back to Paul Ricard, they got rid of that because it was quite a boring race. And instead, we've got Qatar and Las Vegas. Are they going to bring us more value than Paul Ricard?
If you mean value is in money, then yes. If you mean value is in good racing, then we'll see.
Qatar, was it the most interesting race last time? Team, I'm with you, and I think it was. I think it was interesting because it was a new race and we haven't seen Formula One cars around there. So that's why it was interesting. Obviously, Alonso on the podium was great. And that was the first time we've seen him on the podium for a little while. So I think that's why that was interesting. Will it be as interesting this time around? I don't know. Let's wait and see. Let's give it the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it'll turn out to be the best race of the season and we'll all be eating our words. But
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
With Vegas coming in, I think Vegas will be an amazing spectacle. The same as Miami was last year. I think Miami was, it was great. There was loads of amazing people there on the grid. Martin's grid walk was brilliant. Do you know what I mean? It was, but that was probably the most entertaining part of the weekend. You know, the race itself was pretty tame, to be fair. I do have concerns that Vegas will be exactly the same thing. I'm looking forward to it's a night race, isn't it? And I'm looking forward to that. That's another night race. I'm sure it'll be a good spectacle. I hope it'll be another good race. The street circuit, a good addition to the calendar. And I kind of have my doubts. And I certainly hope there aren't any fake swimming pools there.
I think Vegas will bring up the whole debate again of what constitutes for a good race, because I feel like it could be very Baku, but in an interesting, twisty way, because Baku traditionally has had a lot of retirements and a lot of stop and starting, which obviously bunches the pack up, which we've needed in past years, because that's the only way the cars could get close to each other. And then when you actually had closer racing last year, it was probably the dullest race that we've had in quite a while. But does that make for a good race? Do you need retirements? Do you need them all to get bunched up for that to be, and for have to have giant crashes for that to be a good race? Or can we just have it where it's very close racing all the time and lots of overtaking? That actually makes for a good race. In Vegas, I think it's probably going to go for more of the former, unfortunately, which is not what we want, but it's the only way I could see that being an interesting race. Because if we get what we got with Miami last year, then it's going to be tricky to stay up on a Saturday night.
I think Qatar was
power hungry. Las Vegas is going to be a very power-hungry track, isn't it? So I think you're going to really have a spread-out pack, because it's just going to really be down to engine power.
Make it more interesting by letting people in the casinos gamble on which cars they want to give more power to, and then they just switch cars off halfway during the race.
You sort of get to
a bit like how they do in Formula E.
Yeah,
fan boost. I think Qatar was falsely buoyed by the fact that it was in a very good season of Formula One. We still had a championship fight going on at that point in time when we had the race in Qatar, and as a result, there was a lot to play for. We had Lewis making a comeback, and the next race he would draw level with Max Verstappen on points. Lewis was on this absolutely flying streak that we'd previously seen in Brazil. He had had this sort of 25 overtake sort of spell across the weekend. It was a brilliant sort of hype around Formula One. So all of a sudden, the sort of mediocre circuit didn't really have as great an impact. And it was then sort of spiced up on a, I don't want to say more amateur level, but from a different fan's perspective, when we had that series of punctures through the field, which visually stunning, sparks everywhere, looks great, especially in a night race. So it had everything you wanted to make it look like an interesting race. You had the sort of true fans' perspective of interesting championship battle and interesting race for the two leaders. And then you also had the visual element to it, whether Qatar is going to be fortunate enough to have a championship still going at the round it's in. Because obviously we saw the championship wrapped up in Japan last year. There's no reason for it to not be this year, although I hope it isn't. But that could, again, befall Qatar of a case of, oh, this race will just simply happen. Congratulations. And the same will possibly befall Vegas. Although, again, that's pessimistic thinking. We'll wait and see.
I tell you what, Vegas would be an incredible place to win the championship, wouldn't it? Imagine you win the championship, penultimate race of the season in Vegas. The scenes
we'll
never
hear the
race.
Blood beard of it, Fraser.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, what a night out after as well, by the way. I mean, yeah, win the championship and that's it. See you later. I probably won't turn up in Abu Dhabi, whoever wins the championship. So,
yeah, the F1 sort of title trophy has gone missing and it's been accidentally put all on black or something in a casino. It's like, where's the trophy, Max? I don't know. I put it on black. I thought I'd get it back.
What accent was that an attempt?
I don't know. Yeah. I clearly can't do a Dutch accent.
But going back to Formula E, when it finished in New York, Sam Bird got his third place trophy stolen. So that if it does get wrapped up in Las Vegas, will we have those same antics? And I will say, even if I'm not sort of looking forward as such to the racing in Las Vegas, would I like to be there for the atmosphere? Yes. So
I think that's what they're banking on a lot, though.
Mm. Yeah.
Again, it's that measure between good race. But what kind of good race? Good race for the atmosphere or good race for the actual racing that we want to see? Although, Fraser said earlier, we'll kind of have to give it the benefit of the doubt and hope for the best. Just get really drunk on a Saturday night and enjoy it better that way.
Although with my history hat on, last time we had a championship wrap up in Vegas, it was an interesting race. Even though it was a really pants circuit around the Caesars Palace car park, 1982, I think we're talking, likes of Michele Alboreto. It was an interesting one because you had certain people that needed to finish at least in certain positions to win the championship. We saw Williams, I think, win it that year with, well, this is going to be a real test of my knowledge if I can remember who. Yes.
Yeah, Keke Rosberg. Yeah.
So it was, again, one of those things of someone needed to finish fifth, someone needed to finish seventh for this to happen and so on and so forth. And those retirements through the field, which again is that sort of test of man and machine against the heat. Vegas can pull it off. So I don't know, I feel like I could be prejudiced in thinking, oh, it's just going to be a marketing sham. But at the same time, historically, it can work. But these are also times when historically F1 was more exciting week in, week out. So we'll wait.
Last thing I'll say on Vegas before we move on ish is that I'm hoping that, provided it gets a season renewal, if the new CSI TV show doesn't capitalize on this, I'll be very disappointed.
CSI Vegas.
No, I was just going to say that I think it's hard to probably compare it to the 1982 season because that was so wacky in that if it was the year that Keke Rosberg won it, he only won one race. Could you imagine if only, like, I don't know, Carlos Sainz only won one race to then take the championship at Las Vegas?
Well, I was going to say, if you only need to win one race to win the season, that really does open the doors for Ferrari to at least get something right, because that way they've only got to get the strategy right on one weekend, which gives me a false level of hope in reality. Let's see, 1982...
That was mainly Vegas down to, if you want it down to reliability, because there were engine changes around then.
Alboreto won
it. In reliability in the same sentence, Ellie, maybe we're not there yet.
Alboreto won for Tyrrell.
Maybe it's Williams year then.
Yeah. Classification, five seconds. Yeah, Keke Rosberg won on 44 points ahead of Didier Pironi on 39 and John Watson on 39. So it could all happen in Vegas, historically speaking.
If someone wins the title on 39 points, then we've had a shocker of a season. I'm not going to lie.
Reliability has gone out the window.
Could you win 39 points off just the sprint races?
Maybe. It's a nice link. I see what you did there.
It's, yeah, I see, say I had one, but you beat me to it. It's a nice one there. But no, I could say Fraser, because I think the three of us, we all know what our views on sprint races are, but it's been a while since we've had you on, and I can't remember if we had sprint races last time we had you on, to be perfectly honest, for a Formula One podcast. So before we get into it, sprint races, yay or nay for you? Because obviously this isn't F2 or F3, it's F1.
Yeah, an F1 sprint race, which is completely different to the F2, the chaos of the F2 and the F3 sprint races. Am I a fan of them? I wouldn't say I'm a massive fan, but equally, I don't absolutely hate them. I'm a little bit on the fence with them. I think I'd rather have a race than a practice session, absolutely. Have they delivered like we perhaps anticipated they would? No, I don't think they do. That being said, I really enjoyed the Brazil sprint race last year. I think it teed us up very nicely for the race. And I think they're very dependent on where we have them. And it's really interesting. 6 sprint races this year, haven't we? Going to Baku, Austria, Belgium, Austin, Qatar, Brazil. Heavy in the second half of the season compared to the first half of the season, which I think is interesting. Listen, I'm looking forward to a sprint race around Baku. I think that would be really, really interesting. And I think that could be, as I said, it's all down to location, right? And I think we saw it work in Sao Paulo. It's worked both years in Sao Paulo. I think it'll work in Austin. I think that'd be really good. I'm looking forward to Belgium, Austria. Well, you know, what a weekend every single year, relentless with the amount of action that delivers. So, and they're all circuits you can overtake take on. The one that I'm not sure about probably is Qatar. We've just spoken about Qatar and what we think of that circuit. Was it worthy of hosting a sprint race? I'm not sure. I'm sure money talks maybe in that sense. But I'm looking forward to them this year. I think this year, if they work well, then I think they're here to stay. If they don't work so well, then I think it could be the last year we see of sprint races. So I think it's a really big year in terms of whether they'll stay or not, really.
I'll throw it to you there, Jesse, as well, then, that we were obviously moving up from 3 sprint races from last year and the year before to 6 this year. And obviously, Brazil has been there both times. Austria was there last year. They're adding more tracks on it. Are they just trying to give it as many chances as possible because they realised, oh, crap, we couldn't make it work brilliantly with 3 each year? So if we have more of them, then statistically, we should have at least a couple of good ones and we can justify that we can keep doing this.
It does seem to be not necessarily a double or nothing style effect, but it just seems to be if we eventually try all of them, we'll figure out the ones that work. It's sort of like tasting all the ice creams before deciding that you really don't like rum and raisin and then sticking with basically vanilla and a lemon sorbet or something. It's this sort of, we'll just see what works, which isn't the sort of clean and technical approach you expect to Formula One as opposed to just sort of the chuck it and see what sticks method. I don't know. I think Austria making a return, good. Austria always has pretty good racing. It's such a tight circuit. It's demanding. And where you've got lap traffic coming on quite early, the sprint race doesn't dull down the main race too badly. The same with Brazil, because it's a relatively short circuit. It's a relatively demanding circuit at the same time. You get action through both the sprint and the main race. Lewis certainly proved that in 21. I think we're definitely going to see it again in 23. The others... Qatar is definitely an unknown quantity, having had only one F1 race there. I think then chucking a sprint at it is a very bold move, but could play into our favour.
They are also going to be not staying in LaSalle when...
No, we're supposed to be getting
so I feel like that's probably part of the reason for it, because in the meantime, why not just throw everything at it until we... And then we can prove that, yeah, it's entertaining. We've had 3 races technically then at that point, so it justifies us... As Razor's very quickly miming there, just throwing all the cash at it.
If we were going for the money, I'd rather have seen a sprint race at Jeddah than Qatar, to be honest with you.
Jeddah seems to be able to produce action regardless of what's happening. I think that's because the really pants circuit design on the grounds of you can't see what's happening ahead of you. So if it does happen, you're crashing into it. And that's fun for spectators to watch. I don't know. Austin usually has decent racing and might be interesting to see how that goes for a sprint. But the one that I'm interested in is Belgium. Quite how that's going to produce a sprint race over 2 laps is... it's not going to be many laps, and you're going to have teams really putting a lot through ultimately one set of tyres. It's again going to push this idea of, do you go soft and hope to make up a lot of places if you didn't in qualifying, or do you go mediums and hope you can defend it? It's going to be an interesting challenge, that's for certain. Baku is such, for me, a swingers and roundabout sort of circuit.
Baku could be a very costly weekend for teams potentially, because if you muck it up on the Saturday and you muck it up badly, which you generally do if you crash in Baku, then you're going to be against the clock to get it ready for Sunday.
Yeah, it's a lot on the line.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds about Baku, because I think it could be very exciting, but then at the same time, the team's going to say to the drivers, although the drivers may not listen, look, you have to be really careful in this sprint, because if you crash, well, one, you're going to be at the back, and two, it's so costly to them that is it really worth it?
Mm. And it only takes one driver to upset the entire field, one driver to see a small gap and go for an absolute send. Then all of a sudden you've got someone out of position, someone's trying to fight back, you end up with a pack building behind them, someone in the pack makes a send, and then all hell breaks loose. You've only got to have Fernando Alonso be annoyed that he got slightly outqualified by Lance Stroll and try to recreate or correct that in a sprint race for it to all go tee-tong. And I don't know why I chose Lance Stroll for that option. He has a good record of crashing. Good record of crashing in Baku as well, with spectacular style.
Guy can't even stand his bike, so I mean, what hope do we have?
That's a little harsh. Someone knocked him off that, I think. Timo has been accounted for through the process of today. He was not in Spain, as far as we're aware. But hey.
My lawyers told me not to comment on such things.
That's why he's not got his camera on. He's currently clearly in Barcelona airport. Anyway,
which is the race we are most looking forward to this season, he says, changing the subject quickly. Ellie May, I'm going to come to you.
At Monza, because it always provides a good race. Maybe not last year as much, but the years before that. And if you can get the Tifosi going and the Ferrari successful, then...
Last year was a good sacrifice to make this year interesting, because if the curse continues, then there is one driver who is definitely not going to win it this year. So that automatically will make it interesting.
I just wish they didn't have to sacrifice it the year I went to Monza. I was really hoping for a Ferrari
win. I'm quite happy about that. It's just funny.
Dampened my spirits. Timo, which race are you looking forward to most then?
I think probably Silverstone. I know it's a very Route 1 answer, but doesn't really disappoint at all. I mean, again, 70th anniversary did a little bit, but I'm not counting it as a British Grand Prix, because it's in its own little category. So every other time where it's been a British Grand Prix, there's always been something going on, and the atmosphere there is just unlike anything else you get anywhere else, I think. So it's always provided some very entertaining stuff. And with the new regs in particular, last year, that was one of the races where it definitely showed that they were working. So Silverstone.
Very nice. Fraser?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one to pick one. There's every year, I think there's four or five races that I kind of look forward to, Silverstone being one of them. Spielberg, Austria, I always look forward to that one. Spa, Monza, and then Sao Paulo always delivers, doesn't it? Yeah, I think Sao Paulo was the best race. It was Sao Paulo or Silverstone were the best races of last season, but to avoid people in the comments saying, oh, British bias, I better go with Sao Paulo, and nicely.
Yeah,
that hit for you.
I can't sort of delay trying to figure out an answer for this anymore. Now we've worked through everyone else on the list, and I keep looking.
We know you want to say Miami, Jesse. Just get on with it.
It's not Miami. It's not Miami. I don't want to say Monaco because I don't want to risk sort of putting a jinx on something.
Make Australians happy, but we need to get them on side a bit more.
I was genuinely looking at Australia, going, I really enjoyed the Australian Grand Prix last year. It was quite good. We had the Williams doing basically a no stopper with Albon, and it's somehow working. Charles doing quite well. I was like, oh no, I'm tempted by that. Imola, I feel, could be interesting. Budapest is sitting on my list. Annoyingly, Fraser's already stolen Austria, because there was a bit of my brain that started to wander, going, I wonder how good the midget would be going through the Austrian Alps. But I think I'm going to settle with my original answer and go for Australia.
So we'll keep that nice variety going there. It'll make for a nice graphic, and at least we can try and get some people that way.
Something to put on the socials. Jesse likes Australia and is thinking about midgets. But anyway, we'll move on from that to, well, that's actually it, isn't it? Yeah, there we go. They're the races we're most looking forward to. Anyone got one they're 100% not looking forward to? Just one on the list that makes you shudder.
I mean, Vegas seems too obvious, and we don't know about it yet, so it could end up, like we were saying, be a very nice surprise. But going off last year's racing, Imola. It was dull as ditch for water.
Really?
Was not good for a Ferrari fan, was not good. It just showed that the regulations were working in terms of you can get close to people, but good luck getting past anyone.
Pierre Gasly is pleased though there are no sprint races in Italy because he has a very poor history in sprints in Italy.
See, there's another reason not to like it.
Anyone else got a lowest rank they'd like to throw into the ring?
Maybe Spain. What Spain has it really provided?
It was all right.
It was good last year, but again, it was kind of by its own standards, like France was previously. So it had one good race, but I can see where you're coming from there.
I'm tempted to say Zandvoort.
I can see that.
Because, again, I get the idea that it's probably really great atmosphere to go to it. Monza was incredible because you had the Ferrari crowd. You had that big home support giving it a real zest. And you notice that in person. And you get a bit of that through the TV. Zandvoort, again, you get a bit of it through the TV. But if you're not a true Verstappen fan, I don't think you'd enjoy going along to it as a race. And equally, the racing's been...
And to be fair, if you're watching on TV, you're not watching it for the atmosphere, are you?
You're watching for the racing action. And the racing has been mid at best the past two times I've been there, I'd like to say. It's been... F2 last year at Zandvoort was far better. I enjoyed the feeder series.
What can I say, you know?
Yeah, Logan Sargeant's crane cam. That's what we're all here for. And F1 did not provide us with that. So there you are. Zandvoort, I'm not looking forward to. It's the one that could do better.
I think they're all fair choices. I was thinking about Imola as well, Timo. I'll go different. And I go Abu Dhabi. Unless there's a title battle in the last race of the season, I don't think it's ever actually produced a decent race other than when there's a title battle there. And that's simply because it's a title decider. Do you know what I mean? So,
Fraser, if we're coming out of Las Vegas with 39 points in first place, then we'll be in for an interesting time, won't we?
That is, yeah, exactly that. That is true. No, I just feel like with Abu Dhabi, it's, the circuit isn't great. It doesn't ever provide great racing, and I know that it's the last race before the off season. It kind of feels like I'm going through a bit of a breakup, and I'm sat there with the Ben and Jerry's ice cream and crying a little bit. So yeah, I'll go with Abu Dhabi.
That's fair, although I will say Abu Dhabi holds a bit of a sweet spot in my heart. It's,
we get it, you went there, get over it.
But it does, it's a terrible race track, but as a circuit, as an actual place to have an event,
I will say that the one thing to defend it is because I've watching more and more different racing series at the moment. For the Asian Le Mans series, for example, it was brilliant racing there. So it's interesting to see which racing categories suit which circuits better, because Imola, for the European Le Mans series, I enjoyed that. And it was weird. It was like, oh, it's good racing. So maybe Formula One's just not destined for Abu Dhabi to be where it's good.
Where do you think we should finish?
Brazil.
I was about to say something completely inappropriate there. Yeah. Australia for me.
Can I say,
mind that. Right. Get New Zealand back on the grid, then you can have a nice double header to finish off down there.
Ooh, nice. Can I say, right, I actually feel like last race of the season, maybe I'm going to be a bit of a hypocrite here and say, oh, actually, maybe I'm... But for me, Brazil is almost too entertaining a race to have as the last race of the season, because there'd be so much drama in the actual race.
You want the gentle letdown. You want to be let go softly.
Yeah, like there would almost be too much to reflect on. It'd be like Brazil, like so much entertainment, maybe a title decided there. Like the race itself has been brilliant, and then boom, that's it. We're just going to stop, kind of thing. And there's almost too much to talk about. And then all of the journalists go on their little winter breaks, and the podcast stop, and all of a sudden I'm like, I need to speak to someone. This race was so good, and there's like nothing. At least with Abu Dhabi, if it is a bit of a boring race, it kind of gives you that, as you say, Jesse, that downward slope, and it's like, all right, cool, I can finish now. If Vegas is a little bit boring but actually not bad as a venue, I'd say that's probably not a bad place to finish on. And I think that as I said, the post-season party, if you finished last race of the season in Vegas, would be
for some fun content, actually, wouldn't it? You see some of the drivers still outside after the night out following everything. They're just sitting on the side of the road, just like wearing all kinds of wacky outfits from having gone for a massive party. Someone's got a cone on their head, like,
I want
we've got
Ted's
4 months
notebook
to recover from this now.
Ted's notebook the morning after in Vegas would be incredible.
Ted looking around Vegas trying to find where he put his notebook. It's like, oh no.
You just see Kimi Räikkönen in the background slumped against the wall.
He's the one who's stolen the trophy.
Yeah.
Kimmy hungover with an ice cream, Ted walking around with one sandal on, it'll be unreal, wouldn't it? So
yeah, his cameraman has sort of fallen asleep in a bush somewhere, so you've just got bush cam and the noise of Ted wandering around giving people his microphone, just interviewing them at like 4 o'clock in the morning in Vegas on the strip.
Just sort of going,
yeah, just look, oh look, it's Oscar Piastri, he's being sick in a bin. Hard night. But yeah, I think that'd be fun. Ted's notebook from the Las Vegas Strip. I think Sky ought to probably start penciling in some. Just send Ted places. Make the guy do more broadcasting. But yeah, we're waffling at this point because that's all we've really got for this week's episode. We've neatly kept it short and well packaged, more so than the F1 calendar is this year. Timo, where can the people find you?
In the meantime, you can find me over on Is It Fast, the Nitro RX podcast, Paddock Sorority, Paddock Passion, Instagram, and of course, on the curbs. Because I'm just about gosh darn everywhere these days.
Like a bad rash, you're all over the place.
Rude.
Ellie May, where can the people find you?
You can find me co-running our Instagram page and running the TikTok page.
Lovely. And Fraser, what about yourself?
Over on Inside F2, on the podcast there, the F2 show, or on Instagram or Twitter at _Fraser41.
Very nice.
Jesse? Whilst you're here, we might as well ask you.
Yeah, usually I can be found all across Instagram and Twitter at Jesse on Cars, as well as doing my usual thing of writing for Classic Car Weekly, where I'm a staff writer covering all the events, doing all the news bits, and heading out and test driving loads of interesting older cars. There's plenty more of that to come in the following weeks.